You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Well, hello and welcome everybody to the New Churches Podcast. My name is Noah Oldham and I'm here with Vance Pittman. Vance is the president of Send Network, the founding pastor of Hope Church, and the author of Unburdened, Stop Living for Jesus So He Can Live Through You, and The Stressless Life, Experiencing the Unshakable Presence of God's Indescribable Peace. Vance is a seasoned church planter and now the leader of the largest church planting organization in North America. Vance loves church planting leaders, and he wants to inspire people to join in God's eternal redemptive mission of making disciples by multiplying the church all over North America that the nations may come to know him. Vance is married to Christy. They have four children, four grandchildren, and they live there near Las Vegas. Vance, it is so good to see you, brother.
Noah, always good to hang out. Good to connect, man. Excited to be able to do this today. And to be totally honest, as we start this today, I got some mixed emotion.
Yeah.
Just a few weeks ago, January the 12th, I was in a meeting in Atlanta. And in the meeting was myself, Trevin Wax, Clint Clifton, Travis Ogle, Matt Carter. And we were sitting around just talking about the future of Send Network and new churches. And I looked at Clint and I said, Clint, what is the one biggest way that I can help you do what God's called you to do with new churches? And he said, man, the biggest thing you could do is to co-host the New Churches podcast with me. And so January 12th, I said yes to Clint Clifton to begin to co-host the podcast with him. And that afternoon, we all left the building, and I mean, history now tells us what happened that evening as Clint got in his plane, and that was the last time I'd ever see him. His plane crashed that night, and he went home to be with Jesus, and I had the privilege of being at his memorial service. And so I never dreamed I'd be doing the New Churches podcast, and I sure never dreamed I'd be doing it without Clint.
Yeah,
and I feel, and I know you do today, Noah, the massive shoes that we have to fill. But we want to carry the baton that he passed to us in a way that honors his life and his legacy and stewards the passion that he had and that we have for planters and seeing them engaging in the gospel so that the nations could come to know the Lord.
Yeah.
So, man, I'm excited to be here and excited about what's in front of us. And I'm super excited about the content that we want to talk about today and the guests that we have that I'm going to introduce here in just a minute. At Send Network, we want to be a family of churches, planting churches everywhere for everyone.
Yep.
But one of the big mistakes that we've made in church planting in North America is that we have really shifted the mentality from starting churches to starting church services. And so many planters go into communities and the first thing they do is look for a storefront, a movie theater, school, a place to meet. They send out a mailer and they start a service and then try to attract people to a service. When if you look at a New Testament missiology, Paul never went in and started a service. He went in and began by engaging the community with the gospel, focused on disciple making, and then Jesus births his church out of the overflow of disciples being made through engaging cities with the gospel. So today, we want to really talk about what it looks like to begin just like that. How do we birth churches out of evangelism? How do we plant churches and build churches out of reaching non-Christians, lost people for Christ? And there is nobody better to have this conversation with than the guest we have today. I'm so excited to introduce him. It's my friend, Mark Lee. Mark planted Vantage Point Church 15 years ago in Eastvale, California. He was not some kind of church planting guru. He'd never done it before, didn't know how to raise support, didn't come out of a mega church. But God has blessed you, Mark, in such a phenomenal way now to not only have been used by the Lord to birth Vantage Point, but also to birth 10 churches around the country that Vantage Point has been a part of. Mark is the leader of our LA Sin City team. He's a member of what we call Sin Network's lead team of planters, one of the seasoned practitioners that our guys look up to. Mark has a passion to see revival. I love this, sweep from the west to the east. He's happily married, 5 kids, runs ultra marathons. There's so much I could say about Mark. But the reason I'm so excited about having this conversation with you, Mark, is because in a 15-year-old church, you're getting close to baptizing now 2,000 people into your fellowship that have come to know Christ out of the community. So, Mark, we're thrilled to have you here, man. Welcome to New Churches Podcast.
Man, what a pleasure to be here, Vance. And first of all, I just want to say this. I am just so proud to be serving under your leadership in the lead team and planners. We've only known each other for a short amount of time, but I think, can I just say this? Probably the greatest difference that you've already made in my life is that both my life and my church have been more prayerful places since I've known you. So super stoked about what God has started and how we get to work together for the kingdom. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Man. Super encouraging, Mark.
Exciting days ahead. And I'm excited for the subject too. Just jumping into it, building your church plant through evangelism. What we want to look about, engaging your city with the gospel. Let me ask you this question, beginning you with you, Mark. As you built your core team 15 years ago, Vance, as you built your core team 21 plus years ago, what was your pitch? What were you calling people to join you in?
Yeah, that's a great question. My pitch was just, hey, come help me make one of the fastest growing metropolitan areas that nobody's talking about the hardest place to go to hell. I would tell people, hey, all over the world, you may not know this, but revival is breaking out. In India, 16,000 people per day are coming to know the Lord. In China, 22,000 people per day are coming to know the Lord. There are only two places in the entire world where the gospel is not expanding like wildfire, and that is Europe and North America. The United States of America is one of the largest, if not the largest country that's receiving missionaries in the entire world. And I would say that Jesus is Lord, but his bride just ain't looking that great right now. Jesus doesn't need us to save his bride. He can do that all by himself. But yeah, missiologists tell us that the most strategic way of bringing revival back to our continent, see Peter Wagner, the planting of new churches is the most effective way of reaching lost people for Christ. And then I would just tell people, hey, but we're not just starting a church. We want to be, our mission statement is to be living proof of a loving God that we don't want to just take from the city. We want to give to the city. We want to be a blessing to the city. I would tell people our mission isn't just to fill the church. It's to empty the prisons. It's to empty the foster care system. It's to eliminate the divorce rate. That's what revival does. Revival doesn't just fill up churches. It makes a difference in the areas that it's from. That's success for us. And so I always told people, listen, our mission isn't just to get people to come and just warm a seat and laugh at my jokes, even though I can be pretty darn funny at times.
Yeah, I'll amen that.
It's to get people to not come, but to go to your neighbors, go to the nations. Let's go and plant some churches. And I would say that if you want to spend the rest of your life eating Cheez-Its and mowing your lawn, then go ahead. But if you want to make the Inland Empire as it is in heaven, then come on, let's go ahead and do this together. That was my elevator pitch.
That's good. Man, I'm ready to move to the Inland Empire. I don't know about you, Noah, but I'm ready to go.
Vance, I've heard you share stories about the early days of hope. You moved out to Vegas and you began to get this work started. Tell us, what were you calling people to? Say you meet somebody there in Vegas and you're inviting them to be a part of this brand new work that God was doing. What were you inviting them to do? What did you tell them?
Yeah, so I'm unlike Mark, where he planted kind of in the air where he was from. I was a parachute guy. I parachuted into a community that I'd never lived in before. I didn't grow up in the Western United States, even though now I proudly consider myself a West Coaster. My accent gives me away a little bit, but I still proudly consider myself a West Coaster. So I was really communicating before I got here, building a team of families to move with us. We were communicating. We actually had 13 families that relocated to Vegas with us. And here was my pitch. It was very similar to what Mark said. My pitch was about being missionaries. Like, not to think like members of churches, but to think like we're missionaries in cities. And the way I sold it was, man, we get to go join in God's activity by being missionaries, but We get to do it where you have Chili's and Walmart and Texas Day Brazil and everybody speaks English. Like it's in America. So we moved to a city to think like missionaries. And that's a big shift for a lot of church members and a lot of core team members is they immediately start thinking about church and church membership and church programs and church strategies. And to get them to think like missionaries living, using their job, skill, and passion where they live, work, and play to join in the mission of God. And that's exactly what Mark was talking about.
Yeah. Oh, say that one more time. Say that a little bit slower so everybody catches that. Those two sets of three.
Yeah, using your job, skill, and passion where you live, work, and play to join in the mission of God. Mm. Every believer can do that. Every believer can use their job, their vocation, or their skill that maybe God's given them a skill and a hobby, or their passion, something they're passionate about. I got friends now that are super on this craze of pickleball. Well, pickleball can be one of those things that you leverage for the sake of the kingdom. You can build relationships with non-believers. And in doing that, you create relational equity that allows you to have heart-to-heart conversations that lead to gospel conversations. And that's what living like a missionary looks like. And that's exactly what Mark was talking about.
So good. Mark, being there in California, the Inland Empire, I'm from the Midwest, Vance is from the South originally. Now he knows the West. A lot of our listeners may not know the West context. Maybe they come from a more church context. And so when you engage your city with the gospel, what are some things you have to keep in mind? If you're going to lead and build this church plant through evangelism, you're going to begin by engaging these people all around you. Some people grew up in a Christian home. Others have never even engaged with a non-Christian environment. What are some of those things that they just got to be aware of coming into the city, beginning to engage?
Man, that's such a great question, Noah. Like, I do come from the West, but at the same time, I'm used to a language barrier. I am used to a cultural barrier. So what I mean by that is this. My parents grew up in South Korea. I was born in Portland, Oregon. My parents lived through a war. My biggest trial when I was a child was when they canceled a show called Different Strokes. Like two totally separate worlds. And here's the thing. When my parents said something difficult to me, I was always looking for an excuse not to listen to them. I would always go, you know what? They don't understand me. They're just different from me. They're not like me. And I feel like sometimes that's the case with church too. If I look too different, talk too different, if I am too different than the people that I'm ministering to, by the time I say something really difficult to them, then if I'm not one of them, it'll be easy for them to excuse what I'm saying because I'm just so different than they are. And so I think one of the key things in being able to, I think we have to adopt Paul's missionary mindset. Paul said, I want to be a Jew to win a Jew. I think one of the things that's super important as I begin to communicate the gospel to skeptics is that I have to be a skeptic to win a skeptic. So let me tell you what I mean by that. Whenever I get in a fight with my wife, we have rules of the way that we fight. And I am not allowed to speak my position until I have adequately expressed her view to her satisfaction. Once I have expressed her view to her satisfaction, then I am able to present my own view. And here's the thing. I feel like sometimes Christians, sometimes pastors, sometimes communicators, whatever the case may be, sometimes we have not adequately expressed the skeptic's viewpoint to their satisfaction before presenting our own defense. And so what I mean by that is this. Sometimes we don't understand even how things might kind of rub people in different ways. Jesus might say something like, from now on, I will make you a fisher of men. That, you know, we just automatically accept that as Christian people. But what I might do is I might kind of stop and go, hey, you might be tempted to think that God is getting us to treat people like projects. Have you ever felt like that with another person trying to treat you like a project? Well, I think Jesus was just trying to speak their language. Or for me, just this past weekend, we talked about God-sanctioned violence in the Bible. And sometimes what I'll try and do is I'll stop for a moment. I'll go, man, you know what? We as Christians, sometimes I feel like we just kind of sanitize some of these stories. Or maybe sometimes we kind of airbrush some of these stories. But if I was going, if I were going to deny my faith, it might be over some of these issues right here. So I just think it's so important for us to understand our people. Like I'm a prep school kid. You know, I grew up going to private school most of my life. The people of our area, this is a very suburban area with lots of cops, lots of firefighters. And a cop one time said to me, we don't read books, we shoot at them. And so, so it's important for me to understand who they are, how to communicate to them. And so oftentimes what I will do is I'll use a lot of emotion. I'll use a lot of humor. I'm not simply just trying to connect. I'm not simply just trying to entertain them, but I'm trying to I'm trying to draw a picture for them, in essence.
Well, and Mark, I tell you, I've been listening to your series that you're doing right now because I just so enjoy listening to you as a teacher of the Bible. Series you're doing, and don't let me mess the title up, but I think it's Why Would I Believe in a God Who Doesn't Believe in Blank? Is that the way you're saying it?
Yeah. Why should I care about God when God doesn't care about?
Yeah. Why should I care about God when God doesn't care about blank? And if you want to listen to somebody give an example of how you can engage both the believer and the non-believer through some of the hardest passages of scripture in the Bible that, to be honest, Mark, I've heard you tackle some stuff I've never heard anybody preach before. But you've done it in such a phenomenal way that has both edified the believer, but at the same time invited the skeptic to sit at the table and have an intellectual conversation around the word that I think has been a masterclass in how to do that. So for those listening, I'd lean into that series. And Mark, so appreciate what you said. And Noah, let me add two things to what Mark said about what you got to keep in mind if we're going to think about engaging the community with the gospel. I think, first of all, for church planters, you have to remember what they're not looking for. They're not looking for a church service. Like, maybe if you grow up in Birmingham or Atlanta or Nashville or Memphis in the Bible Belt, you're a lost person that's looking for a church service. But outside of there in North America, and this is rapidly becoming all of North America, people aren't looking for a church service. So when you go to a community and the first thing you do start a church service, you're scratching where they're not itching. It's like a Muslim coming to my town and starting a mosque and sending out a mailer and me getting that mailer and going, I think maybe the mosque has all the answers to life because he said it's not like my granddaddy's mosque. I don't even have to wear a turban. Like, they'll provide the rug. But there's nothing in me that resonates and goes, I think they have all the answers to life.
Yeah.
The lost community in North America, unengaged people largely view the church that way. They don't think that we have the answers. They've read the press clippings. They've seen the bad stories, the bad press. So you got to remember they're not looking for a church service, but also remember what they're looking for. Every human being is looking for relationships and community. Mm. So don't go in and start a church service. Start those things. Engage your community in a way that allows for relationships to be cultivated, community to be established, because everybody's looking for that. And when you do that, you build the relational equity that allows for gospel conversations to happen.
I love that. So even if a church plant comes into a city and they engage the city with the gospel and then seek to make disciples out of that and then see God plant the church, we all kind of get into these rhythms in those early days. And what you see is that a lot of churches, a lot of church planters will default to the two things. It's the weekly gathering and some sort of discipleship in small groups. Now, praise God, it's more than just a Sunday experience or going deeper in the word. But I remember even 15 years ago hearing research about church planting that said people will only do two things well. And because they'll only do two things well, you should focus on your Sunday gathering and your midweek small groups of some kind. How do we challenge people to keep that engagement with the city, that evangelism of that one-on-one, sharing the gospel, reaching people where they are? How do we keep that a focus in the midst of that early grind of we're here, we're going now? What would you guys say to that?
Well, I think what I would say is that, like, I think there's an age-old adage that if we want other people to feel something, that we have to bleed something. And so I think if we want to be able to engage the gospel and do that consistently, if we want to build just an evangelistic fire in our church, man, it has got to start with us as the pastors and as the lead people. I think the greatest victory that happened in our church is that God gave me a heart of an evangelist. We all want to reach the lost, but I think we want somebody else to do it. And But at the same time, like if I don't have it, then how can I expect my people to have it? Like an early on story for me is that like I'm kind of a preacher by nature, and I'm a people pleaser. So I haven't naturally just kind of excelled in this area of evangelism, but I just knew that that's what God was calling me to do. And so, I don't have a Sunday sermon to write or anything, you know, and I knew that what was going to break down walls was relationships. So I did everything that I could to get out into the community. My office was at Starbucks. I went to a business networking group called LaTip. I would never do something like that, but it was a group of business people who started their businesses. And at the end of the time together, what everybody would do is they would give references for each other. So the dentist would stand up and he would say, "Hey, a good tip for me, I'm starting a dental practice. And so a good tip for me is if you know somebody, I don't know, who has bad teeth, then you can refer them to me," or something like that. You know, the carpet cleaning guy then would stand up and say, "Hey, if you know somebody with 30 cats, then why don't you go and refer them to me?" I stood up and I said,
"Or your local psychologist, whichever."
Local psychologist. That's right. I stood up and said, "Hey, everybody, I'm a pastor. I'm starting a church. So if you know somebody who's on their sixth marriage, if you know somebody who's an alcoholic, somebody who's the pot smokingest," I don't know if I can use this language here. I used it there. I said, "Somebody who's the whoremongerinest, like if you know that kind of person, then I want you to refer them to my church because we're starting a church for people who don't go to church." And then one lady stood literally right in the middle of the meeting. She stood up and she said, "Heck yeah." Except she didn't say heck. She actually used another word. And she was the first person to ever come to Christ at Vantage Point.
Wow.
Let's go.
And Vantage Point hadn't even started. It was my relationship with her. It was my ability to kind of like get past the walls of church as I knew it and to become kind of like you were talking about, Vance, leverage those relationships that we had in the community to have gospel conversations like that. Like I knew that, man, that I had to be on fire. I had to have an evangelist heart if I wanted the church to even have a chance at replicating that in our community.
I would press even further on that, Mark, and say that what you're really articulating is really an issue of Christ-likeness. Mm. Because when you look at Jesus's life in the Gospels, Jesus's life revolved around three relationships: his relationship with the Father, his relationship with his disciples, and then thirdly, his relationships with people that were far from God. And so many of us as Christians get caught up in the relationship with the Father and the relationship with the disciples.
That's right.
And we think we have to have a special gifting to do this thing called evangelism. But evangelism is simply who Jesus is being fleshed out in my life. If I'm not evangelistic, that's not an evangelism issue in my life. That's a Christ-likeness issue in my life. And Mark, you live that out so well because it's just who you are in Christ. It's Christ in you, living himself through you in an authentic way. And I think often when we talk about the gifts of evangelism, we somehow create this category that people feel like they're excluded from when we're really talking about Christ-likeness. Now, I do believe that there are people that have greater giftings as evangelists, people like you, Mark, that God calls to plant churches. Some have greater giftings as evangelists, but all of us have Christ in us that is seeking and saving the lost. He's still doing that through our lives today. And I think, Noah, we talk about how do we maintain this culture. It's about continuing to teach people that and then creating opportunities like Mark had with that business meeting. But we have to create opportunities within our church that allow people to live that out, because many will never choose that on their own. But if we create those opportunities, we're giving them the opportunities to do that.
And I think that's so good, Vance, because I think we're kind of framing the conversation wrongly in our culture right now, whereas maybe we talk about racism, whether we talk about homophobia, there might be different people who say things like, "Well, we shouldn't be racist." Okay. We should go as far as to be anti-racist. And I definitely agree with that. But that's not the goal of the gospel. And that's not the goal of what that's Jesus had in our mind. The goal is, when I sit at my table, who else am I inviting to the table with me? Like, it's not just a matter of, do I have these warm, fuzzy feelings about other people, or do I not? Do I have an absence of malintention? It's like, when the table has typically been used to oppress and divide people, but Jesus was always inviting tax collectors and other people unlike himself to the table. And so I think a question that I'm constantly challenging myself with, and a question that I'm constantly challenging my disciples and other people with, is, who's at the table with you? Who doesn't look like you? Who doesn't think like you? Who doesn't talk like you? Who doesn't have the same sexual orientation as you? Because that's the life that we're called to live.
Yeah, so each of you guys have had a ton of experience in engaging your cities with the gospel, engaging your community. You probably had a lot of victories. You probably had some challenges you faced throughout the years that you say, hey, I wouldn't do that way again. What's a nugget, a practical nugget of wisdom that you would give to our listeners leading a new church on do this or maybe don't do this?
I think one of the things that I did well, anyway, I did a lot of things wrong, but I think one of the things that I did well, and I learned this point from a pastor named Brian Carter in Dallas. He says, there are a lot of people in your community that know your community a lot better than you do. We want to not only exegete the word rightly, we want to not only exegete our people and our city rightly, but like, how do we get to know our community? And so he said, get to know the people who already know the community better than you do, so you don't have to start from ground zero. So for me, that would be, how do I get to know the mayor and the city council? Because they know the city way better than I do. And as a church planter, there's going to be so much insecurity involved with that. But you know what? I've just got to get over that, and I've got to reach out to them. And if they would make time for me, man, I'm going to take that all day long. The people who know the community the best are oftentimes, at least in my community, the administrators, the principals, the vice principals of our community, they are so in touch. Like, our area is a very young family area. And so what I was constantly doing is I was setting up meetings with them. The warden, I've reached out to the warden on several different occasions. That's been a more difficult relationship to get through to. But what I've always done is I've kind of leveraged their knowledge of the city to go, hey, what do you know about the people of the city? Because I live in suburbia, and at least from surface level, everything seems like things are going fine. But then once you start to dig past the cover, what you realize is, man, there's some real hurts family-wise. There's some real needs that are happening in this community. And it was really kind of tapping into their knowledge that helped me get to know the heartbeat of my city just that much more.
And Noah, I know we're running out of time, so I'll just say it this way. You can't lead what you don't live long-term. You can fake it in the short run, but you can't lead what you don't live long-term. So I would say to every planter listening to this, you need to make sure you are leading people to Christ and that there are people being baptized into your fellowship that you are building relationships with. Don't let there go 2, 3, 4 baptisms and somebody not be baptized that you personally led to Christ. And when you do baptize them, you need to tell that story. Our people need to hear us talk about people that we've led to Christ, not just the sermons we preach. Lead it, model it, live it, and this principle will be caught by your people.
That's so good. Guys, thank you so much for this wisdom. This is part one of the conversation. Going to continue it in a near future episode. Stay tuned for that one. New Churches Podcast.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com. We'll be right back.